Thanks for listening to the podcast from Faith Radio Mornings.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings. Let it rise.
Okay, it's 4 minutes after the hour. Hope your day is getting started on the right foot. Here we go in Rochester, New Hampshire. There was police in New Hampshire that said a thief used a hard chunk of snow to rob a barber on Milton Road. The union leader says the thief entered Herbert's barbershop in Rochester late Friday night and dumped snow on an employee's head before grabbing the cash and running. Police says there's no description of the robber because the employee was attacked from behind, and they have since wet-vacked up the evidence and sent it to forensics. Try to figure out exactly how they can trace it to that guy. Okay, Rebecca, at break we were talking about this wrestler, and you made a very astute observation. Do share.
Oh, it's the story of the wrestler, and it's causing questions about gender identity. If someone thinks that they are one or identifies with a gender that is different than who they are biologically, you know, how do you handle that? And our whole culture is wrapped up in this question. And I thought about it from a personal standpoint and wondered what that person that's in the middle, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the name right now, but what that wrestler is thinking and how they're feeling. And I wondered about the personal conflict that would result if you believe that you are a boy on the inside, and yet you're signing up to wrestle with young women, with girls. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that cause some sort of a conflict in your spirit, in yourself? Wouldn't you feel some sort of guilt because you're like, I'm a guy who's essentially beating up girls. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know wrestling isn't beating up, but being very physically aggressive with and pinning down these girls. Mm-hmm. Because every young guy that I've ever known, once they kind of know right from wrong, are taught, you don't beat up girls. That's not something that it's okay to do. Mm-hmm. And so I wondered about the personal conflict there.
I had no personal conflict fighting with my sisters, although I never won.
Are they bigger than you?
They're just stronger than me. That was an embarrassing admission I just made on the air. But I think your point's very interesting. If this born a girl, now identifies as a boy, and so she's identifies as a boy in girls wrestling, beating up girls handily because she's a guy. So your point is, how does he feel about beating up girls?
I think the whole thing is really confused.
Tell me about it. Every time I try to explain these transgender issues, I always trip over myself.
I guess it made me wonder and think, when we hear these stories, it's very easy to make the broader application and to say, and I think that is valid. Because you do not legislate toward the exception. Mm-hmm. You never legislate toward an exception. Otherwise, it causes bad legislation. And that's pretty well validated, I think. But thinking about the people that are in the middle of these stories, because they are real people that are involved, there's an awful lot of lack of guidance and lack of standards in general. It's like we're just all the adults in the scenario are just kind of making things up as they go along in this brave new world. Mm-hmm. So I just wondered that it seems like this doesn't help, like allowing this young person to kind of readjust all the rules in the situation isn't helping. I would assume, and I think, that it would provide just more food for confusion.
I agree. The whole
thing is going to be more confused, not less.
I agree. Okay, Rebecca, where is God in all of our suffering, especially if you may not have a relationship with God, and then you get some illness or affliction or some horrible circumstance in your life that makes you even more skeptical of God? My next guest coming up in just a few minutes is going to discuss what it's like to be in that room when you're giving people bad news. And we're going to talk to Dr. Mark Sofeldt when we come back. It's 8 minutes after the hour. Welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. Bill Arnold here. I'll be back in a minute.
Can a God of love turn a blinded eye to my suffering? And How can a God of peace watch this storm rage? And how can a God of power stand idly by and watch me cry?
That's a big question. When you are suffering, do you think God is just idly standing by watching you suffer? That is Dr. Mark Sofeldt, that's singing and behind the keyboards, and he is my guest on the studio line right now. And we're going to talk about suffering. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill. It's good to be with you.
No kidding. All right. When we are suffering, we have to find a way to put our hurts and our pain into bigger hands, which would be God.
Yes, because suffering of any kind, one of the ways that you suffer is you lose control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a physician, I see this all the time. You know, we're cruising along well, and life is good, and we're kind of caught up in all the pursuits of our family and our job, our material pursuits, and then all of a sudden along comes suffering, and we can't control it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that is a great opportunity to think about that. Is there a greater authority? Is there a greater hope? Is there a greater power?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really a great question.
You had a great illustration you shared with me about everybody sort of remembers where they were when 9/11 hit. We all have kind of memories of that. And when people come into your office, you're a surgeon and a physician, and of course, those are that's redundant because I don't think you can be a surgeon without being a physician.
No,
you are giving people, if you have bad news, their 9/11 moment, and they're never going to forget that time when they're sitting in your office and you're the one handing them the bad news, and they are stepping into a whole world of suffering and pain, and they start to get angry, resentful. And then where is God in all of this? And you get to understand from a Christian standpoint, you know exactly where God is in all of this.
Yes, and it's just as you describe. I mean, we walk into the room sometimes as physicians, and we know we're about to say something. It's going to change a patient's life forever,
mm-hmm.
and that of their family as well. And what I find is that the culture around us wants to say, well, God must be deficient in some way. Otherwise, I'm not going to be suffering. You know, if God, you say God's loving, does he not love me enough? Is that why I'm suffering? Or you say God's powerful. Does he really love me, but he's just not powerful to do anything about it? And that's become a very common theme in our society, that human suffering is a reason to reject God. And man, that breaks my heart, because I see the Christian message is being the absolute opposite of that.
Mm-hmm. And when we opened up the segment, that song was being sung by you, and you have a gigantic heart for worship and ministry and music. And if I were to ever start a talent mafia, you'd be one of the first guys I'd take out. Because I would just have to take you out right away.
Unless you saw me try to dance, then you'd probably keep me in for a while.
Yeah, but coming up on Saturday at Wooddale Church, you have put together a really special program of music. And the attraction is to try to tell people who might be suffering themselves or know someone who is a little angry at God, maybe a little aloof with God, as why is God allowing me to go through this? Where is God in all this, to come be part of an event that is going to maybe answer those questions with music and worship and inspiration?
Yes, the whole point of this concert that's coming up this Saturday night is exactly as you say. It's to take music, which really speaks to our heart, and we can cut right to the emotions and right to the heart of our suffering through music and through the lyrics of the songs. And what we really want to do is start with that place, like you heard in that song, that clip that you gave. We want to start in that place. You know, how can a God of power, stand idly by and watch me cry. And we want to move all the way through to an understanding of this is what the Bible says about God's love. This is what the Bible says about God's presence in our suffering and the help and the hope that he brings. And it is absolutely designed for the person who doesn't really understand that or doesn't feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And the music is so comforting, and I've listened to several songs, and I'm starting to understand how God wants to reach into our pain, reach into our suffering, and let us know that he is there for us, always has been and always will be. And it's quite the opposite of how you might naturally be feeling. How could God let this happen to me? And it doesn't necessarily involve getting a big tumor in your lungs. Maybe it involves the loss of something, just the heartbreak, and we all have plenty of that, don't we?
Yeah, it absolutely. I mean, we're talking about people that have lost someone, who have lost a loved one, a spouse, a child. We're talking about people who are struggling with addiction or someone that's been affected by someone else's addiction,
mm-hmm.
or the loss of a job, or, as you say, there are all kinds of ways that people suffer. There are all kinds of ways that people lose control of their circumstances and are really fearful of what's next.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bible really has a lot to say to those people.
I agree. Mark, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, more with Dr. Mark Sofeldt, we're going to talk about suffering and what it's like as a physician to be delivering the difficult news and the compassion and love he has and the music that he shares. It's all wonderful. We're going to be back in just a minute. Thanks for being with us this morning on Faith Radio.
And let him love you. Let him heal your broken heart. Let the power of forgiveness give your life a brand new start. Come to Jesus. You say your life is filled with conflict and you're yearning for some peace. You're struggling with addictions and you just cannot.
Ooh, we're all looking for peace. That's Dr. Mark Sofeldt singing behind the keyboards. What a ministry you have. He's a physician and surgeon. He can actually walk into an operating room, open a person's chest, and know what to do. Mark, I have a feeling you did not spend a lot of time watching Gilligan's Island growing up, which was something I was very good at, by the way.
Well, you know... I did hit Gilligan's Island pretty well, but anything that happened in the 70s and 80s and 90s, I pretty much missed.
Yeah, you were paying attention
sure.
to other things. And you
That's
are,
right.
You are so equipped to deal with people in the midst of their pain and their suffering. And, of course, Christ suffered first on our behalf and gave us hope. And we have an answer in a very hurting world. And you have such a heart for and compassion for people. You love them where they're at, and you also want to come alongside them as they're suffering and encourage them and give them hope. And this Saturday at Wooddale Church in the Great Room, you're going to put on a little concert that's going to be designed to say to the person who might be a little bit against God or Christianity, or they've been put in a place where they've had difficult circumstances, and now where is God in all of this, just to come and hear some incredibly great worship music. We've been listening to some of it. Here on the program today. How are you feeling about Saturday? You ready?
Oh, I'm ready. This has been something that has grown, you know, not only out of a lifetime of treating patients and thinking, boy, I really, as a singer and a songwriter, I need to speak to this because this is my everyday world. But also, it grew out of some experiences over the last few years, and I've walked some journeys with dear friends that have lost children and loved ones. I had an opportunity to go to a couple times to some maximum security prisons. And what you see there is the suffering of regret and the need for forgiveness and hope in people that are going to spend the rest of their life in prison. I had a lot of experiences bubbling up, and these songs are coming out of that. And so, you know, I'm ready. I'm anxious to share that and anxious to see what the Lord will do.
Mm-hmm. And this is really for Twin Cities listeners, unless you want a little day trip to come to Wooddale Church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. And I think it's going to start around 7 o'clock on Saturday yep. night. And there is so many people that have experiences. They talk about a doctor's bedside manner. And not all doctors have good reputations in that department, Mark.
Well, that's true. One of the things I know when I walk into a patient's room is that in every situation, there's different levels. You know, I know there's the physical. And, of course, we're all about that as physicians. We want to get people past illness and disability and back to normal life and long life. But I also know that there's the spiritual issue. And I also know that there's a greater plan. God works through suffering in a way that is unique. And the key is to come closer to him through that experience and not mm-hmm. be driven further away.
Mm-hmm. Actually, do you feel that through the weakness and the brokenness that you then have access to God's power in your life in a way that you might not have had it otherwise?
Well, yes, and that is absolutely true. And the thing that is amazing to me is that when I have a patient who's a Christian, a believer in Christ, almost universally, this is what they end up saying. I have such joy. God is so real to me. This is one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me. And when you're standing in a patient's room, sometimes I'll have medical trainees and, you know, their jaws will hit the floor. Mm-hmm. It's the last thing they expect someone to say. But I think God becomes so real, so powerful. Everything we always thought we knew about God is right there, and his presence is so palpable and real that, it is an extraordinary thing to witness, and I've seen it in many patients' lives.
Yeah, so you get your own personal faith strengthened because of the testimony of some of the people that show up and say, all right, I've got some bad news today, but God's in control of this.
Absolutely. And comes to their side immediately. They don't necessarily have to go out and process for 2 months. I mean, in the midst of their tears, in the midst of their shock, God comes to their side.
Mm-hmm.
And already they start to find hope and they start to find strength.
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly what God promised, that he'd send his Holy Spirit as a comforter. And that is an absolute reality.
Yeah, because sorrow is not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Right.
And, you know, we can all go along and be pretty naive about life, and then all of a sudden you get blindsided by something, and you're all of a sudden facing maybe the end of your life. And then you have to ask yourself, are these promises that Christ has made, are they real? Do I really, really believe them?
Yeah, it's a universal experience. Even if you hit the idealized American life and you're pretty well off and live to 90 and die in your sleep, there's still the gradual loss of ability and the gradual loss of aging.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still the what's next. And that's a burden too. People wondering, wow, I hope I've been good enough. I hope, you know, the next life is favorable. And, God wanted us to know. He wanted us to be certain. He wanted us to have complete peace as we go through that transition.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what we want to sing about and share.
Yeah. If I was interested, how would I go about finding some information on it?
Well, there's a couple ways. One is I do have a website for the ministry, which is called Healing Stream.
Healing Stream?
So it's just Healing Stream,
mm-hmm.
and it's just healingstreamevent.com.
Okay, awesome.
All one word.
Yep.
And then also they can just go to Wooddale's website, wooddale.org.
Okay.
Or you can just show up. We
awesome.
Will welcome you with open arms.
Awesome. Mark, you're an incredible, talented guy and a very, very nice man. Thank you for being on the show this morning. Have a great week, and I'll see you Saturday.
You too, Bill. Thanks
awesome.
So much.
You bet. Thanks.
Yep.
It's 26 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning on Faith Radio. Bill Arnold here. I'll be back in just a minute. Loved my conversation with Dr. Mark Sofeldt about suffering and what we can, how we can deal with it. You know, the Beyond Suffering Bible is the first study Bible to directly address those who suffer and the people who love and care for them. This Bible is filled with devotionals from Johnny Erickson, Tada, and features that invite you into a conversation about suffering and its place in your life. You can actually go and visit myfaithradio.com to sign up to win one of these very cool Bibles. All right, we'll be right back with Dr. David Aikman. We need to remember that our past does not dictate our future. Here's speaker and author Stacey Eldridge.
In the light of God's love, He wants us to know that we are not defined by what we do. The past, the wounds we've inflicted, the ones we've made, our histories, we're not defined by our failures. We are only and ever defined by the love of God and who He says we are in this moment. See, perfection isn't even the goal. Not a one of us is going to get to be perfect this side of heaven. Jesus alone is perfect. And the invitation is to lean into Him for His life to fill us, for Him to actually live His life through us, and to know that we are loved. We are loved regardless, and that's who we are.
You can find the full interview at myfaithradio.com. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. David Aikman, the wise and sage professor Patrick Henry University. He's retired now, but he's going to weigh in on foreign policy and other subjects. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Watching your teen spin out of control is hard. It's painful. But it's even worse when it places undue stress on your marriage as well. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. A family crisis will amplify whatever tension exists between a husband and wife. The pressure builds and builds until it becomes overwhelming, and the temporary hardship destroys their lifetime relationship. But it doesn't have to be that way. Remember when you and your spouse got married? You promised to love each other in sickness and in health, for richer, for poorer, for better, for worse? So if you're in the worst part right now, don't give up. Hold on. Stay the course. And never lose sight of the other side of the struggle. This too shall pass.
Is conflict heating up in your home? Learn how to argue effectively with a new free download from Mark Gregston. Go to ParentingTodaysTeens.org. ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Minutes after the hour, foreign policy and news from overseas is awfully confusing to me at times, but that's just me. This is Bill Arnold here in studio. I have Dr. David Aikman on the line. He's our foreign affairs contributor. Recently, David moved to Ireland, which makes me extremely jealous. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Bill, for having me on.
So how do you like Ireland? How do you like living there?
Well, thank you. I mean, I've only just gotten here have some physical care that I need. And
okay.
I've been here many times before. I like Ireland very much. It's a beautiful country with some wonderful people living here. And some things take a little bit of getting used to, but it's terrific, basically. And it's a very good place to look at the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. And whereabouts in Ireland are you?
Well, it's south of Dublin in Bray.
Oh, sure.
Which is
I know
in the
Bray
middle
well.
Of County Wicklow.
I know Bray well.
Oh, really? That's
oh, yeah.
Great.
Been there many, many times.
Why did you go to Bray?
I performed in Bray. I had a theatrical production
really?
That ran in Bray. Yes. Yes.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. And then I'm curious, have you been able to find a church yet? Or are you starting to find community? Or
well,
is that taking some time?
That's a very good question. I'm popping around. I visited one church that met last Sunday in a Church of Ireland church. In other words, Church of Ireland is the sort of generic term that Irish use to describe Protestants.
Mm-hmm.
And originally the Church of Ireland was part of the Church of England. So there are a number of independent Protestant churches in Bray that I will be visiting, and I hope I will be able to tag on to the one that seems to be most edifying.
Well, I bet you will find that church, and I hope some of the health issues you're dealing with go well. Let's talk a little bit about...
Well, thank you.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Europe with the rise of nationalism.
Right. Well, it's a phenomenon that began long before the famous Brexit vote last June.
Okay.
A sense that the European Union had become a sort of colossus, megalopolis of cosmopolitan decision-making by committees based in Brussels that nobody had elected. This is the nightmare of the bureaucratic committee-run state. And many, many Europeans have been chafing at the bit, although they enjoy the economic benefits of the European Union and the trade and some of the social benefits. Many other people were just really very dismayed by the sort of imposition of these bureaucratical rules invented in Brussels and then imposed on everybody. For example, even in Ireland, you have to get permission, not literally permission, but you cannot paint your outhouse any way you want it. Mm-hmm. It has to be within a pattern of colors and shades. And even if you paint the outhouse, you might have to get permission to do that. These kind of niggling regulations really infuriated people, especially in England, where the effect of the migration policy approved by the European Union introduced into Britain very large numbers of people from Middle Eastern countries who had no desire or aptitude for assimilating into British culture. So the British at Brexit revolted against this bureaucratic imposed sort of sameness on the continent, and they wanted to recover their own sovereignty and their own law. And that sort of attitude is gaining ground in many, many different European countries right now.
Mm-hmm. And of course, David, that begs the question, what color did you paint your outhouse?
Well, I decided to paint it rainbow so that nobody would be offended.
That's true. And no one, yeah, that's very funny. Okay, let's talk a little bit about what's going on with the rise of terror and some of the things happening with radical Islam in Europe right now.
Right. Well, of course, the sort of scandal of the week was that statement by Donald Trump, President Trump, I should say, who referred to violence in Sweden. And many people who saw that clip, which had originally been, I think, on the Tucker Carlson show, which was illustrating the rise of crime areas in the Swedish capital of Stockholm and even police no-go areas, mm-hmm, as a result of unbalanced migration. Many Swedes took offense and said, what terrorist business in Sweden? And then all of a sudden, the following night, in one of the heavily Muslim migrant populated areas of Stockholm, there were riots and cars were broken and windows were smashed and there was complete mayhem.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a situation which is occurring in a number of European countries. And paradoxically, Sweden, which has been traditionally very hospitable for humanitarian reasons to migrants or immigrants from all over the world, the Swedes are finding that their own society is being really pressured by the unassimilable groups of people who just want to act out their own lifestyle and religious faith, regardless of what ordinary Swedes think or how they behave.
Mm-hmm.
And this is quite threatening to the Swedes. And of course, the Dutch, under the leadership of the political party of Geert Wilders, are really taking up arms against immigration, especially from Muslim North Africa. As you probably know, there have been a number of terrorist incidents in Holland in the last few years, which were clearly the result of migrants from the south coast of the Mediterranean, Morocco and Algeria and other places, acting out their own Muslim terrorist doctrines against the Dutch. And that has infuriated many of the Dutch people and given rise to an unexpected nationalism within the Netherlands itself.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Aikman, if I sat next to you at a dinner party, my IQ would be up 29 points after one meal. We're going to take a little break. I love you. I love the fact you use words I've never heard of before. So when we get back, more with Dr. David Aikman. Thanks for listening to Faith Radio Mornings. Bill Arnold will be right back. Minutes after the hour, Dr. David Aikman on the studio line. We're talking to him from Ireland. What a nice place to be living. And Dr. Aikman, Rebecca, who runs, produces the show, has got a big question for you. Rebecca, what is it?
Sure.
Hello, Dr. Aikman. It's great to have you with us, of course.
Hi.
I always learn
a lot
when you're with us. And we were talking about this rise of nationalism in Europe, and it's connection with it, not only economic policies, but also the increases in incidences of terrorism that tend to be linked to radical Islam that comes from this influx of migration. There's all this connection, and it's a complex situation. I think the big question a lot of people have is, how do you know when the policies that are being put in place to secure, for a sovereign nation to secure itself, have gone too far? Maybe it's a pendular reaction where we're swinging from being open borders all the time, and we've realized that's maybe not safe for our own people. So now these nations are deciding to shut things down. Is it an overreaction? How do you know where that line is? And what do you believe, that these policies are the right solutions, or are they going too far in the other direction?
Well, Rebecca, that's a very good question. Now, the first instinct to let in refugees from countries where a lot of trouble is happening is a very good humanitarian impulse. The question is your society flexible enough to cope with people of a very different background and religious faith? And are the migrants themselves willing to submit their own prior political and social values to the host country into which they're trying to fit? And I think the answer to that question for most Europeans would be no, the migrants have not done enough work at being willing to submit to the laws and customs of Western Europe, Western civilization, and many, many of them want to impose their own Sharia system onto their host countries, and this is a recipe for disaster.
I appreciate that question, Rebecca, and you guys should go to lunch. You guys would have a lot to talk about.
that would be amazing, but I don't, you know, if I make it to Ireland, maybe
you gotta
someday.
You got to go to Ireland first. Okay, Dr. Aikman, I want to ask you about what happened to Kim Jong-un's half-brother, who sort of got offed in airport in Kuala Lumpur with possibly a weapon of mass destruction.
Well, this is extraordinary. I mean, unfortunately, the North Koreans have been found guilty on previous occasions of murdering people outside their own borders. For example, they put bombs on airliners. They exploded a bomb, I think, in Malaysia several years ago, where there were South Korean government officials present, killing many of them. And their willingness to put to death people who oppose them overseas has been frequent and notorious. But the real point of this particular attack in airport at Kuala Lumpur is that a weapon of mass destruction, VX nerve agent, was used in a public place where lots of ordinary civilian people were milling around.
Mm-hmm.
And that is absolutely heinous. I mean, to put anybody to death in the public space is awful. But to do it in a way that seriously endangers people who have no connection with Korea or North Korea or anything else is really, I think, a crime against humanity.
Mm-hmm. It does sound a little bit like a James Bond movie, doesn't it?
Well, it does, except that in this instance, as we know, the villains are people you cannot really hold accountable for anything, because Kim Jong-un, the ruler of North Korea, this 28 or 29-year-old former general and the son of Kim Jong-il, is not accountable to any institution or any court on earth. So it's really a very frightening and dangerous situation.
Dr. Aikman, let's talk a little bit about the new National Security Director.
Yes, General McMaster.
General McMaster, yeah.
Very interesting choice. I mean, I think it's significant that President Trump selected a man who was highly respected by all of his military peers and by people who had worked with him in the arena of national security discussions, and a man who is well able to bring together both civilian-based strategic understanding of the world and a knowledge of how the military fits into all these different equations. I think it's a very good choice, and it was unfortunate that General Flynn went through that sort of mini-crisis by making a phone call to the Russian ambassador before President Trump had taken office. That was a difficult situation, but I think his replacement by McMaster is a masterly selection.
Will McMaster have a mess to clean up after Flynn's problems?
I don't think so. I mean, it's really a question that I think has to be resolved, in essence, by the FBI. How did these leaks of the transcripts of conversations between Russian officials, in this case a Russian ambassador, and the putative U.S. National Security Advisor, how did they get out? I think that is a very troubling question, because it suggests that there have been people within the intelligence services who perhaps might have been given political appointments by former President Obama, whose dislike of incoming President Trump has sort of given them the so-called justification for releasing secret documents to the public. I mean, this is a very sinister development, and it's very troubling, and I hope that the FBI gets to the bottom of it.
We've got only 30 seconds left. What do the Irish think of us Americans over there?
Well, the Irish like Americans in general, and of course so many Americans claim Irish heritage. It's almost a cliche. If you're from the East Coast somewhere, New York or Boston, you say you have an Irish great uncle or something like that. So they are affectionate towards Americans and quite amused by the American sort of patronizing love of Ireland as a sort of bedrock of family stability and so forth. At the same time, the Irish tend to be rather progressive and liberal in their politics, so they're not very friendly towards President Trump.
Yeah. Dr. Aikman, so nice to hear your voice over the pond. Thanks and for being with us today, and have a wonderful week.
Thank you. Same to you, Bill. Thank
Thanks
you
so
for
much.
Having me on.
You bet. 57 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us today. Take a short break and be right back. Have a great day, everybody. Here is Isaiah 41:10 to close out the show. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. You know, you hear some bad news and you hear some scary stuff, and whatever you're facing today, don't fear. He's with you. Don't be dismayed. He's your God. He'll strengthen you and help you. He'll uphold you with his righteous right hand. Have a great day, everyone. God bless.
Thanks for listening to this Faith Radio Mornings podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Faith Radio Mornings, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thanks for sharing the audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings.